You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings, 12. This is your host, Corbin Smith. Glad to have you tuning in for our Thursday episode of Locked On Seahawks. Coming up on today's show, I'll be kicking off a lengthy series looking at each of Seattle's position groups heading into offseason activities. Going to start off with the defensive tackle position today. Plus, John Williams of Locked On Sooners will drop by to share his insight on fourth-round pick Trey Brown. This episode is brought your way by Rock Auto. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. Visit rockauto.com and tell them Locked On sent you. Now for your lead story here on Locked On Seahawks. The draft is in the rearview mirror, but that does not mean teams are suddenly going to stop making moves to fill out their roster. The Seahawks have been pretty active the past few days, and they added two more players to the 90-man roster on Thursday. The first one being Nick Gugamis, a former receiver out of St. Thomas University, a Division III school in St. Paul, Minneapolis. Why does the school matter in this instance? Well, obviously, Seattle doesn't normally sign small school prospects, but this is John Schneider's alma mater. He graduated from St. Thomas, and Gugamis has some links to Pete Carroll as well. His father, Neil, played for Carroll when he was the defensive backs coach for the Vikings in the mid-80s, so he played two seasons for him. So you got some interesting connections there. John Schneider's alma mater, the fact that Gugamis' father played for Pete Carroll. And this is a kid that when you look at how he performed at the college level, he has not played football since 2018 because he battled injuries throughout his college career. Per his profile on St. Thomas's website, he had one reception for 8 yards in his career. So you may be wondering, why are the Seahawks signing this kid? It's all about freak athleticism. While he wasn't able to play a lot of snaps in his college career because of injury and really hasn't played football since 2018, he did partake in Minnesota's Pro Day in April. He also had an individual workout that he recorded, and that video is on YouTube, and he looks every bit as fast as these numbers suggest. He ran a laser-timed 4.49-second 40-yard dash, a 6.93-second three-cone drill, and a 4.12-second short shuttle. He did that at 6'4", 248 pounds. He also had 25 reps in the bench press and a 38.5-inch vertical. You're not going to find very many tight ends that are going to put up athletic testing numbers like that across the board. This is a rare athlete at that size. And so that's why the Seahawks are taking a chance on him. And when you consider they didn't have a lot of draft picks this year, and they only added one tight end in free agency. They did bring in Gerald Everett. They could use another tight end or two going into offseason work and training camp. Gugamis is a guy that can come in and potentially be a practice squad player because there is a lot of untapped potential if he can stay healthy. He just has a rare set of athletic tools. So the Seahawks decided, let's take a flyer on this kid, and it makes a lot of sense. The other move that they made today, they claimed Savion Smith, third-year corner, off waivers from the Cowboys. The Cowboys cut him a day ago. When you consider what Dallas did in the draft, they picked three defensive backs, including Nashawn Wright, the 6'4" corner out of Oregon State. They didn't have roster space for Savion Smith, and so he was one of the players that was subsequently released after the draft. But this is a former five-star recruit. LSU ended up bringing him in. He didn't play any games for the Tigers, transferred to a community college, came back to the SEC as a member of Alabama, and had a really strong 2018 season, 60 tackles, 3 interceptions for the Crimson Tide, but he still went undrafted, mainly because his pro day, it's a little different than Gugamis. His particular pro day numbers were not impressive. Ran a 4.66 40-yard dash. That is on the really slow end of the spectrum for an outside corner. Several of his other athletic testing metrics were below average. And so he ended up dropping in the draft. The Jaguars signed him as an undrafted free agent. Didn't make it out of training camp in Jacksonville. Was cut. Was picked up in the supplemental draft by the XFL. He played in a couple of games in the XFL before that league folded because of COVID. Then he was with the Dallas Cowboys last season, mostly on the practice squad. He did get promoted for 6 games, made 3 tackles for the Cowboys, mostly playing special teams, got around 45 to 50 snaps on the defensive side of the football. Reason the Seahawks are interested in him is pretty simple. He's 6'1", 200 pounds, 33 1/4 inch arms. He checks off the size and length aspects that Seattle typically likes on the outside. And yeah, they've changed their approach a little bit. We saw that with this draft last week using a 4th-round pick on Trey Brown. But John Schneider has pointed this out a few times, their post-draft press conference as well as today on ESPN Radio, that this does not mean they're suddenly not going to be looking for tall, lengthy corners. They still want those types of corners, but they have made adjustments. They're more flexible with the types of players that they're going to bring in to play in Pete Carroll's scheme. Savion Smith is a player that intrigues because of that size, and he did have good production his 1 season at Alabama. So it's, again, another one of those cases where they will take flyers on players that maybe haven't worked out elsewhere that have some intriguing size traits or they have incredible athleticism. They will take chances on those types of players. And bottom of the roster guys, you can do that. They're looking for bodies to bring into camp. So now Smith's going to get an opportunity to compete in a cornerback race that's going to include Trey Flowers, DJ Reed, Akella Witherspoon, Pierre Desir, Trey Brown. You've got Randall, Heslop, Miller. There's a lot of bodies there. So it's going to be a fun competition on the outside for Seattle, figuring out who's going to be the 2 starting corners, which other players are going to make the roster as backups and prove their worth on special teams. Smith's going to get an opportunity to compete against those players. He certainly has some of the physical attributes Seattle likes. And if he's able to put things together, maybe he's a player that can surprise and hang around into the 2021 season. That's going to be one of the most thrilling position groups to watch, if not the most thrilling position group to watch in training camp for the Seahawks this year. So I think both these pickups make a lot of sense. These are the type of moves, these are the type of players that you are going to be adding at this stage, filling out your roster. And occasionally a player like this comes in and flashes enough that you want to see more, whether that means practice squad or getting them on the active roster. So Gagamis and Smith, they're going to get a chance to compete, and we'll see what happens. Coming up next in the 2nd quarter, I'm going to be kicking off my post-draft depth chart review at the defensive tackle position. A couple big changes there, including Jaron Reed being released earlier this offseason. I'm going to be looking at projected starters, some reserves, and of course, a wild card, maybe an early 53-man roster projection as well. Don't go away. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day. Hey, Seahawk fans, listen up. Nugenix, the number one selling free testosterone booster at GNC, is offering a complimentary bottle to all football fans in America. To get your complimentary bottle of Nugenix Total T, text DRAFT to 231231. This unique man-boosting formula is powered by Testofen, which helps boost free testosterone and total testosterone levels and increase energy and lean muscle mass. Nugenix Total T is a great way to increase lean muscle and feel stronger with more energy and endurance. And like the TV ads say, she'll like it too. Plus, text now and they'll include a bottle of Nugenix Thermo, their most powerful fat incinerator ever, with key ingredients to help get you back in shape absolutely free. Text DRAFT to 231231. That's DRAFT to 231231. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. I'm your host, Corbin Smith. Glad to have you listening in for our Thursday show. The Seahawks have undergone some significant roster changes over the last couple of months. Maybe the biggest loss the Seahawks have had came last month when Jaron Reed refused to do a restructured contract and add a void year. He wanted a long-term contract. The two sides couldn't see eye to eye, so the Seahawks ultimately were forced to release him when they couldn't find a trade partner. Reed has been one of the best interior pass rushing defensive tackles in the NFC for the last 3 seasons. So that leaves a big hole at the 3-tech position. That being said, the Seahawks should feel pretty good about how their defensive tackle group looks heading into the offseason program. Kicking off my position by position post-draft review, let's look at these defensive tackles. Let's start with the projected starters. No Jaron Reed, but Puna Ford's back. He signed a 2-year extension, was a restricted free agent going into this offseason. And Puna Ford had an outstanding 3rd season for Seattle, set a career high in tackles, had 28 pressures on quarterbacks, we're starting to see him emerge as a quality pass rusher. It hasn't really translated to sacks to this point, but I could see in year four, especially with his new contract in hand, that some of these pressures are going to start turning into sacks, especially with him being your primary three tech next to Brian Monet, who I have down as the other starter for right now. Monet obviously battled an ankle injury last year that cost him a handful of games. He was on injured reserve. That's when the Damon Harrison experiment happened. Then when Monet came back, Harrison requested to be released, and the Seahawks obliged, released him. He wound up with the Packers for a couple of games. But Monet is their guy at the nose tackle position. He's going to be entering his third season, another really good undrafted free agent signing for them. 345, 350-pound run stuffer that forces teams to do double teams in the middle. And what I was most surprised with last year was how effective that he was rushing the passer. He has more athleticism than you think he would at his size. And so he was able to collapse the pocket some. He had a safety against the Cowboys where he brought down Ezekiel Elliott in the end zone. So you saw some athletic plays from the big fella last year, and I feel like he's just scratching the surface of what he's capable of doing. He's had some injury problems dating back to his time at Michigan, so that's always going to be a concern with him. Can he stay healthy for the full season? And that's why they brought in Al Woods. That move was made before they officially released Jaron Reed. And Woods played with the Seahawks in 2019. That's actually the last time that he played. He opted out of the 2020 season due to COVID-19 shortly after signing a one-year contract with the Jaguars. So he didn't play in any games last year. He's going to be 34, so he's getting to be an older player. But we have seen older players at that position do really well for the Seattle Seahawks. So I expect that Woods is going to be able to give them some quality snaps, especially with a year off. He didn't add any more wear and tear to his wheels last season. That's the one advantage of opting out, is he should be fresh, should be able to give you some quality snaps, mostly a run defender, but he had a couple nice rushes. Now, pass rush is his lone season in Seattle. So he's a player the Seahawks know well. He's actually been with the Seahawks two other times. So I think Woods is probably right now your top reserve. Then you have Robert Kamdiche, former Cardinals first-round pick that was recently signed. Cedric Lattimore, undrafted free agent out of Iowa, made his NFL debut in Seattle's playoff loss to the Rams, made six tackles in that game. Certainly had up and down film. He got exposed at times in that game, but it was his first NFL action. He had never even played in a preseason game. They also have Miles Adams, who spent a few weeks on the practice squad last year. He was signed to a reserve deal. And Jared Hewitt, a few days ago, signed after the draft, undrafted free agent out of Virginia Tech, 9.5 sacks the last 2 years for the Hokies. So at 290 pounds, he offers the team some flexibility in the three tech position as a pass rusher. Might be another undrafted free agent that maybe can push for a roster spot. To me, the biggest wild cards at this position, you've got to start with Robert Kamdiche. Maybe I'm putting a little too much faith in him at this point, but there's never been a question about the athletic tools at 296 pounds to run in the 4.8s in the 40-yard dash, have a 35-inch vertical. He has always been a freakish athlete for his size. And you will see flashes on the field where he is unblockable. He had one game in Arizona in 2018 where he had seven tackles, four tackles for loss, and 2.5 sacks. And the Chargers could not block him. The problem has been you see that for a game and then you don't see it for three or four. In the case of the NFL, we've really only seen that type of performance once. And he's had some injuries mixed in. He tore his ACL at the end of the 2018 season. Then only played in a couple games for the Dolphins in 2019. Didn't play at all last year. He's only 26, though. It's not like he's an old player, and he hasn't played for a couple years. So he should be really fresh. And based on what Pete Carroll said, he blew them away with his workout. I have to wonder if being out last year really was a wake-up call for him, especially when you consider he only played in two games the year before. He showed up back from his ACL injury out of shape, overweight. The Cardinals were just fed up, so they moved on. I'm wondering if he finally got that wake-up call that he needed. And if he did, this is a guy that I still think can be an outstanding three-tech in the NFL. This could be a steal of a signing. But again, I may be putting too much faith in the Seahawks coaching staff being able to bring that out of him, or thinking that he has turned the corner in his life and that he's going to be more dedicated to football. I don't know where that's at. We have to see what he looks like on the field, but This is one of those reclamation projects that's absolutely worth bringing him to Seattle. I think he's got a really good chance to push for a roster spot. And I think the same can be said for Cedric Lattimore. If somebody's going to take advantage of Kemdiche not putting forth his best foot forward and not playing his best, it's Lattimore, because he did make some really good plays in that playoff loss to the Rams. He had a couple huge third down stops in the fourth quarter that if the Seahawks would not have had a muffed punt by DJ Reed, we might be talking about this a little bit differently, because both those stops proved to be huge. They kept the Seahawks in the game, at least for that time being. And unfortunately, that costly fumble allowed the Rams to go down and push the lead back up to multiple scores. And the Seahawks were just not able to get anything done on offense. But I thought Cedric Lattimore really played well in that game. He's a player that the organization's high on. Adams is somebody that I haven't seen much of to this point. He's a relative unknown. Maybe he could play some big end for them too at his size. And Hewitt, as I mentioned, he's a player that fits the size thresholds the Seahawks like at that three tech spot. He's right at 290 pounds, put up some decent athletic testing numbers at Virginia Tech's Pro Day, and he had good production as a pass rusher with the 9.5 sacks the last 2 years. So he's one of the undrafted rookies that I'm fascinated to see what he looks like when they get on the field for offseason workouts. And of course, their training camp the end of July, he might be one of those sleepers to keep a very close eye on. As far as which players are on the roster right now, if the 53-man roster was being picked today, I would go with the veterans for the most part. Puna Ford and Brian Monet would be the starters. Al Woods is going to be the main backup. And I think Robert Kemdiche, because they lost Jaron Reed, they really need to find another three-tech option that can turn up the heat on quarterbacks. And again, maybe I'm just putting too much faith in Kemdiche figuring things out, or the Seahawks coaching staff helping him reach his potential. But I just think this is one of those reclamation projects that has a chance to potentially work out for the Seahawks. And so I think Kemdiche is on the Seahawks opening day roster. Cedric Lattimore, they try to get back on the practice squad. Maybe Jared Hewitt falls in that line as well, but I think they're going to keep four DTs on this projection: Puna Ford, Brian Monet, Al Woods, and Robert Kemdiche. You got a couple of athletic three techs, a couple of big bodied nose tackles, and of course they can play LJ Collier and Rasheem Green, as well as Kerry Hyder, reduced inside in passing situations too. They've got a lot of flexibility with how they can use their defensive line with some of the moves that they have made this offseason. When I return to the third quarter, John Williams of Locked On Sooners is going to be jumping on the show. The two of us are going to talk about Seattle's fourth-round pick, Oklahoma cornerback Trey Brown. Where does he fit into Seattle's secondary, and what is his ceiling in the NFL? Don't go away. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Baseball season is in full swing, and you can track all the action at BetOnline. Get all the latest news, odds, and info for all your sporting needs, including Major League Baseball, the NBA, NHL, and all of the UFC MMA action. Before the next pitch, head over to BetOnline on your laptop or mobile device and check out all the great sporting news, sign-up bonuses, and contest information. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore, as this is your chance to get into the game as teams prep for their runs to the playoffs. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. With the ever-increasing numbers of makes and models, it is now impossible to stock all the parts you need in a traditional chain storefront. Why endure often pointless or seemingly intimidating questioning and wait while the counterman orders the parts on his computer, choosing the only brand his warehouse happens to carry? You have computers with access to rockauto.com and in your pocket. RockAuto.com is a family business serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. Go to RockAuto.com to shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. Best of all, prices at RockAuto.com are always reliably low, and the same for professionals and do-it-yourselfers. Why spend up to twice as much for the same parts? Go to RockAuto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car and truck. Write "Locked On" in their "How did you hear about us?" box so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. RockAuto.com. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. I'm your host, Corbin Smith. I'm excited to have with me today John Williams of Locked On Sooners. John, the Seahawks, one of the biggest surprises to me from this draft, at least in the middle rounds, they bucked a trend that has lasted for a decade. Ever since John Schneider and Pete Carroll came to town, they have loved their really tall, long-armed cornerbacks. And they broke away from that trend this year in the fourth round and went with Oklahoma cornerback Trey Brown. Was this about the position that you expected to see him come off the board in the early to mid fourth round?
Yeah, to be honest, actually, I wasn't sure he was going to get drafted. I thought between him and Trey Norwood, you know, my co-host David Walker and I, we talked about it before the draft that we thought that maybe they should come back and use that COVID year five eligibility rule and come back for another year to try and boost their draft stock. And at the same time, we knew of the guys that they had coming in were going to be more of the long, tall, heavier corners that Alex Grinch was coveting. And so it was a little bit of a surprise for me to see Trey Brown go off the board inside the fifth, in the fourth round. I thought maybe if he got drafted, it'd be after the fifth, sometime in the sixth or seventh. And it really surprised me when Seattle took him for all the reasons that you mentioned. You know, the Seahawks, they love the long, tall corners, the heavier guys, and he just doesn't fit that prototype. And so it'll be really interesting to see how they decide to utilize him.
That's really interesting that you viewed him getting drafted as being up in the air, because I actually asked John Schneider about this after they picked him, the end of day three, their press conference. They actually did it early this year because with only three picks, John Schneider wanted the entire seventh round so he could recruit undrafted free agents. And so they got us on there early. But I just asked him, you know, do you get to a point where the measurables get thrown out the window and you just got to look at the football player and say the production's there, the style's there, let's pick this kid? And one of the interesting things that he said in response was, sure, we'd love to get a 6'2 corner, and I'm sure that Brown would like to be 6'2. And then he said, if he was 6'2, he'd be a top 10 pick. So I'm curious what you think of that statement, because it's clearly evident they're very high on the football player. And by him saying that, they think the skill set is there for him to be that caliber of player. And maybe he's slipping down draft boards just because of his size and his length.
Well, I think two things are at play a little bit. You've got some of it is the respect level that the nation has for Oklahoma's defense. It just hasn't gotten there yet. And so I don't think teams are highly or looking at Oklahoma's defenders and coveting them as much. We saw Ronnie Perkins slip to the end of the third round when my projections were way off on this guy, because I had Ronnie Perkins as a fringe first rounder and he went all the way to 332. But for Trey Brown, I think the things that you're going to like about him as a Seahawks analyst and the Seahawks fans, he's a tenacious, you know, defensive back. He doesn't play to his size. I mean, he can get outworked and outmuscled because he's a smaller guy. And that was one of the issues that Oklahoma's defense had last year, especially if you go back and watch the Iowa State tape. Everybody in the secondary struggled with their really big tight ends. And so it's not going to be one of these guys where I feel like you're going to use him as a tight end stopper. I think he does have some attributes that can make him very effective in the NFL. One of those being just his propensity for turnovers. As a hook defender in particular in like a cover three that Seattle likes to run, I think he could be very, very effective because he knows how to play zone very, very well and knows how to jump passes and create turnovers.
And it's good that you mentioned the turnover aspect, because I think that's one area that Seattle's had a lot of inconsistency in their secondary the last couple of years. And everyone knows the Legion of Boom, their propensity for creating turnovers. But since that kind of disintegrated, they lost Sherman, Earl Thomas was gone, Camp Chancellor had to retire. They've had their share of issues with consistency creating turnovers. Some of that's been the pass rush has been very up and down, which that has a positive correlation, obviously, with turnovers. But Pete Carroll was talking about that physicality, the fact that he's really good on special teams as well. I think that's another reason they picked him when they did. They view him being their gunner. And the tape I've watched, he's one of the more impressive gunners that I've seen at the college level. So certainly that adds value as well. Let's talk a little bit about the weaknesses, though, because it's easy to overlook this kind of stuff when you're looking at a player. This is what amazed me, that he had never given up more than 70 yards in a game in coverage, because in the Big 12, basically every team's trying to score 60 points every single game. And so that really surprised me that there was a corner, especially the caliber receivers he has gone up against, that he would have numbers like that. But talking weaknesses, I'm sure you're going to bring up the penalty issue. That's the one thing that really jumped out. How concerning is that going to the next level? And what are some other issues that you could see causing problems for him?
Well, I think, you know, that the penalty thing can be something that with a little bit more savviness and the coaching that he'll get in Seattle, because we know Pete Carroll in particular and the defensive back coaches that they've had run through there, Chris Richard, several other guys, they're going to be able to coach some of those things out of him a little bit, some of the grabbiness. And it was an issue for everybody in Oklahoma's secondary last year, especially if you look at some of the tapes where they're playing against bigger tight ends, bigger wide receivers. But I think what is he's going to be able to overcome some of that because he is a hard worker. He's a fighter. He's not going to give up in contested catches, but you're not going to want to play him against some of the bigger, more athletic wide receivers or tight ends. Again, I think size is the biggest issue for him. I think he could be a nickel corner, but it'll be interesting to see. You mentioned that they don't have really that plan for him, but if you're going to get him on the field on defense, I don't really expect them to see him on the outside because I just don't think he could hold up real well if you're playing against a Michael Thomas on the outside in the divisional round of the playoffs. That's just not going to go very well.
Yeah, I think one of the big reasons that this mindset has changed is they had DJ Reed come into the lineup midway through last season, who I'm sure you're familiar with playing at Kansas State going against Oklahoma. And he came in at 5'9", under 32-inch arms and played outstanding football in the second half. So I think that really opened Pete Carroll's eyes that, you know, maybe quickness and change of direction is more important than having somebody that can really come up and press the living daylights out of a receiver, which is something that they've always liked in Seattle. They still signed a couple big corners, so it's not like they've completely abandoned the type of players that they like. But looking at where Trey Brown fits in Seattle, you've mentioned some of your concerns and obviously some of the strong points in his game that could lend to success at the next level. What do you see Brown doing upon his arrival in Seattle? How do you see his rookie season playing out? And under best circumstances, what would be the ceiling for him as an NFL player playing in Seattle's scheme, in your opinion?
Well, I think the ceiling for him is he could be a functional starter in Seattle, especially because if you look at the rest of the NFC West, you've got some teams with like LA that's got Robert Woods and Cooper Kupp. They're not the biggest wide receivers. So he could be a guy that you throw out there and match up with them because he is more quick than he is strong. And he is more quick than he is fast. And he could match up with those guys fairly well, or Christian Kirk down in Arizona. And so I think there's a role for him, especially in his rookie season. It's going to be interesting to see if he's able to earn those snaps. I think year one, as you mentioned, he's going to be primarily focusing on special teams, but I could even see them throwing him in there on dime packages as that hook, kind of in the hook position in a cover three, where he's just kind of playing that short zone middle of the field, because he's very effective in that. I mean, I think all three of his interceptions, if I can remember right, came in that zone spot of the field where he's not running deep with guys, but he's playing that 10 to 15 yard hook and just knows how to play that coverage very well, knows how to play in that zone very well. It's hard to say, man. I think, you know, he's one of those guys that can play with a chip on his shoulder and can surprise you. Again, my projections on Oklahoma's draft was way off every step of the way. I thought Creed Humphrey, Ronnie Perkins would be fringe first rounders. I wasn't sure these guys would get drafted. And I thought Adrian Ealy was going to get drafted, and he went as an undrafted free agent. So, man, it's hard to say. I don't know. The draft was weird this year, but I think Trey Brown has a chance because he is a tenacious player. He's not going to allow his draft stock or his size overcome his ability to progress in the NFL.
I got to wonder if Pete Carroll is going to be going to more of a by committee approach with his cornerbacks this season, especially with all the different receivers that are in the NFC West. And the Cardinals getting Rondale Moore, that's just not fair. Already having DeAndre Hopkins. So they have to have different types of players that can match up with different types of receivers, especially in that division. And so I do think that Trey Brown's got a chance to be able to get some significant snaps right away in some capacity. We'll see if it's on the outside the way they planned, if he's going to get some reps in the slot. But I think at minimum, you're going to see a lot of him on special teams. And so it's going to be one of the more interesting draft picks that Pete Carroll and John Schneider have made, because it goes so against their DNA as far as the type of players they like on the outside of that cornerback position. But you got to make adjustments to stay in front of everything in this league. And it looks like the Seahawks, for once, are actually doing that with their secondary. John, I greatly appreciate the chance to break down Brown's game and really looking forward to seeing what he can do in the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah, we're excited for him. Looking forward to seeing how he fits into Seattle's scheme. And good luck to him and to you all. And hope it goes well. Thanks for having me on the show.
Get all the sports news you need in under 20 minutes with the new Locked On Today podcast. Host Peter Bukowski updates you on the latest news in every major sport with the help of our local experts. Follow the Locked On Today podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get podcasts. You can follow me on Twitter at Corbin Smith NFL. Make sure to follow Locked On Seahawks on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, and the all-new Odyssey app. That's A-U-D-A-C-Y. Coming up on our Friday show, Nick Lee and I will be answering mailbag questions and we'll be dishing out some superlatives for Seattle's offseason additions through free agency and the draft. Looking forward to the show. Thanks for listening in and enjoy the rest of your Thursday. Go Hawks.